Once more unto the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting second hour of the Personal Wealth Coach on this, the last day of February 2015. There will be, by executive direction, no more February 2015 after midnight tonight somewhere. Actually,
right.
Actually, there actually will be 2015, you know, February 28th. It'll go right out into the Pacific until it hits the dateline. And then it will extinguish itself against the dateline.
You realize that that is truly an executive action. It was just an executive action that took place thousands of years ago by Julius Caesar.
Well, Pope Gregory changed it after that.
I realize the Gregorians changed the year.
And then we've got it all shuffled around,
but
again.
That's also
like the 28-day deal.
So,
you know.
So basically what we have is three executive actions. We had the executive action of Julius Caesar, followed by his adopted son Augustus, which added two new months and made it so that the dates of the months were all kind of wonky. And then Pope Gregory came along and did another executive. So three executive actions mean that today is the last February 28th, 2015, ever.
There's actually another one after that. I don't remember the name of it. But we're not actually on the Gregorian anymore. We're post-Gregorian now. We added a few days here and there and moved everything around.
It's still technically called the Julian calendar, though.
Yeah, well, it could be, yeah. That's because Julie got involved.
Right. And then August came along with Augustus.
But then by law, we set where the time zones are, where the boundaries are, the Congress did.
Right.
And but once it gets outside the United States, it gets a little bit squirrely because, you know, actually the time zones continue on across the Pacific Ocean, and that's, I don't know who did that, until February, the last of February 28th will eventually hit the international dateline.
Right. There's a vote, a democratic vote, of all of the fish that live in that time zone as to where the edge of the time zone is.
Okay. Well, whatever it happens, it will extinguish itself.
It's a valid vote, just like the votes in Russia.
So that as midnight hits the international dateline, which is sort of on the other side of the planet, as far away from Greenwich, England as you can get and still be on the planet, it will just extinguish itself, and that's just one of those weird things, which means that it is a different day on the other side of the dateline. It's tomorrow. And so recently I was talking to a fellow via Skype. I was looking at him. We were discussing it. It was...
Well, the other people on the other side do not believe that. They believe that we are in yesterday.
Yes, and that's...
We believe they're in tomorrow. Right. This is like
But I challenged him on that because...
Gulliver's Travels.
He should be able to tell me what the stock market was going to close at on that day because he was already in tomorrow. The guy I was talking to in Japan. But he wouldn't tell me. And I think it's a conspiracy of the news media because he said it's not in... It doesn't show up where he is until after it's closed where we are, which is in the previous day. Which must be terribly confusing. Because it's also confusing going the other way too, but that's beside the point. Anyway, you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and if where you are is February 28th, 2015, you can give us a call in here at 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
The Commerce Department did another one of those executive things and reduced the gross domestic product of the United States for the fourth quarter from 2.6 to 2.2. What power?
Yeah, this is very strong of them to be able to shift
reach
the past.
Out and shift 0.4% of the whole out. This is on an annualized basis, of course.
Just rewriting the, we weren't quite right the first time. We'll change it again. It's another estimate, and we're probably not right about this one either, but we'll change that one as well.
Well, but that's really not bad because when you dig into the numbers underneath all of that stuff, what we see is an accelerating economy. The other thing, and this is really important, a survey came out this week, and you may not think this is really important, but it is. Fast food workers in restaurants across the country saw their wages go up on average in January. Now, we'll have to see if that continues on into February, but what we're seeing is a slow rise in wages at the typical flipping hamburgers, standing behind the counter, taking orders position, we're actually seeing those wages come up. And this follows, of course, the largest employer, the largest company, I think, the largest retailer in the United States, Walmart, raising its wages for its employees. You might think, oh, well, inflation's coming. No, 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 no. Actually, we got a lot of catching up to do. It's really, really good to see the low-end wages start to come up because the people who earn those low-end wages tend to spend all the money they get every month and sometimes some more. This is the people who buy the things that other people make who... And the people who own the company are the better off people. And so as a result, what we see is further evidence of something I've been saying for a number of years now, and that is that, I have to credit Mark Zandi at Moody's Economics for this. He's the first person that mentioned it, and I dug into the numbers, and I completely agree with him. 2016 will be the year in which we see this economy hitting on all cylinders and running strongly. 2015 will be a recovery year. Things will get steadily better during the year. And by the way, speaking of steadily better and things that are going to happen, right after Janet Yellen's testimony before Congress, normally, very frankly, the chairman of the Federal Reserve speaking before Congress has got to be one of the top 10 most boring things in the history of the universe. This time it was exciting. It was more like a debating match. And she got mad a couple of times at members of Congress. And what I love is her bipartisanship anger was beautiful. Elizabeth Warren was one of her primary opponents, and they had an argument. But the more right-wing Republicans were also hammering her. So this is interesting. The far left and the far right were hammering Janet Yellen, as she testified, all I got to say is, if the far right and the far left both hate her, she must be doing a pretty good job. And it was, for me as a geek, I found the entire testimony and everything that went on between them to be utterly fascinating, and an indication, like I said, that the Fed is doing a pretty good job, despite the fact that both the left and the right would like to. Speaking of net neutral, the Fed would like to bring them under congressional control so that they could tell the Fed how to spend money. And they may make up other reasons for saying that, but really it boils down to the fact that the ability to control what the Federal Reserve does controls the money supply in the economy, and each side would love to adjust the money supply to support elections from
right.
their perspective.
And there's a great chant, Rand Paul is big into this chant, that says that the Federal Reserve is not audited and we don't know what's going on.
It is audited.
It is audited, and it's part of the Federal Reserve Act that it gets audited. It's just not audited by Congress. Congress's audits are politically motivated. And if you get a firm, Deloitte and Touche is the one that most recently audited the Federal Reserve.
Deloitte and Touche.
It's just really easy to mess that.
You could say touche because it's in French. It's
right.
Touche. It means touch.
So they do get audited, and they get audited on a regular basis. That's how they know where their money is. If they don't get audited, then it doesn't work very well.
And we have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
The top of the hour news, I guess Obama has announced new guidelines or rules for financial planners. Are you guys aware of that?
Correct.
How
that's
going to affect you? I'll hang up on this.
Oh.
Okay.
We like them.
Yeah, this is actually one of the things we were planning on talking about. The Employee Retirement Income Security Act of 1974.
Did you hear him say that? Otherwise, that has got to be. You are a geek. You know,
I am a geek.
That's ERISA.
That is known as ERISA, and it is the law under which 401ks, IRAs, 403bs, most of the alphabet soup
are supposed to operate.
These are basically retirement plans, pension plans, that sort of thing. All of that stuff is supposed to operate under ERISA. There have been some recent changes that brought IRAs under that same umbrella. The individual retirement accounts got brought under the same umbrella, and that means that the Department of Labor is the regulator. They are the ones that come in and say, we need to make sure that you're acting in the best interest of the participants of the plan. And by the plan, that's the retirement plan. most of the investment world is regulated by the Securities Exchange Corporation. Commission. I'm sorry, they're not a corporation, are they?
Right. See the how securities. They act. Right.
Securities Exchange Commission comes in and says, this is the way things are supposed to go. This is the definition of when you're acting in your client's best interest.
It's actually Securities and Exchange Commission.
Yes, but the "and" is somehow missing from the acronym. It is not.
But it's in there.
Right. It's not the SEC.
It is.
Yeah,
but it is still. Right. Go ahead.
Okay.
Sorry.
So the Securities and Exchange Commission, when they're regulating, they're saying these are the standards, and there's two areas that they regulate. There's a small area of fiduciary management. That's something that we talk about being registered with the SEC. These are the people that operate for a fee directly charged from a client and are required by law to work in the client's best interest. There's a whole much larger group of people that are in the brokerage category. They're salespeople. They buy and they sell mutual funds, stocks, bonds, commodities, all kinds of things. The SEC comes in and regulates a big chunk of that, and they regulate it with a focus towards a self-regulatory organization called FINRA.
Which is owned by the broker-dealers.
Right. And basically what it is they regulate knowing that these brokers have their own interests ahead of the clients. This is a known thing, the whole caveat emptor. You're supposed to have a prospectus and read it and understand
read
it before investing.
Carefully prior to investing.
Correct. All of that stuff means that you're in charge of your own safety. Somebody might be trying to sell you something and charging you lots or little, and it's up to you to determine. If you're working with a fiduciary, then they're supposed to give you a full disclosure and say what's going on. That's not how your retirement plans are regulated. And anytime, if those of you that are listening, if anybody is listening, if you go to your employer and you say, how should I invest in my 401k, they're not going to tell you. They may give you a pamphlet and tell you to fill out this thing. They're not going to ask you the questions and come up with an answer on their own, because in order to do that, they have to know what your interests are. They have to know what your interests are so that they can put them ahead of their own. It's a fiduciary standard. And the Department of Labor has a different standard than the SEC. The DOL has a higher standard, and it's about to get higher again. This is the thing coming out. Go ahead.
Here's the big impact of what the president was talking about. And the Department of Labor was tasked by Congress under Dodd-Frank, by the way, to issue some rules.
So they went and did it, and Congress said no.
And what is ironic is back when the Republicans controlled both houses under George W. Bush, 2004, I don't remember what year was it, the Retirement Something Act of 2000 something. Anyway, George W. Bush signed into law a bill that was originated by the Republicans, passed by the Republicans, signed by a Republican president, that told the Department of Labor to create a new fiduciary standard and to regulate the rollover of ERISA-qualified employment accounts.
Are you talking about
Dodd-Frank? Into IRAs. No, before that.
Okay.
It's before that. I don't remember.
Gramm-Leach-Bliley is the one
about. No, I'm not talking about Gramm-Leach-Bliley. It's the Employee Retirement Act of something. Anyway, I can look it up later and give it to you. But anyway, it has been ignored as if the thing was never passed. Basically, it said, if you're going to recommend, and it basically brought IRAs, that law brought the IRA under the Department of Labor. The Department of Labor has never issued any implementing regulations because it's been blocked by special interest groups, specifically the brokerage firms. And the organizations run by the brokerage firms have done everything possible to keep that from being implemented, because in many cases, those IRAs are rolled into extremely high commission, extremely high risk investments that are demonstrably not in the IRA owner's best interest. They're not, and so there's a difference here. A broker, a person who receives commissions, has the right and is held to what's called a suitability standard, meaning are you really a smart person And if you're really a smart person, you should be able to read the prospectus and understand it. And you sign off on this thing, said you did read the prospectus and understand it. Therefore, anything I present to you that is not absolutely inappropriate for you, totally inappropriate, is okay. In other words, the burden of proof is on the person who has the IRA. And when you roll over from a 401k to an IRA, in many, many cases I have seen this, people roll from what may not be the best set of investments in the world to something significantly worse. I've sat through many a presentation at broker-dealers where the idea is to roll them over into a limited partnership or a non-traded REIT or something that pays, and believe it or not, up to 10% of the money to the broker-dealer and the selling person, and it has these huge fees, and in many cases, no suggestion that there will be any significant performance other than for the broker.
Right, and this is something that has happened again and again and again, because people come to us and I look at where they are invested in their IRAs. It's something that they rolled over from a 401k, and they have really, really expensive products in there. Things that annuities and real estate investment mm-hmm. trusts that obviously charge a massive commission. And the client didn't know about it because they signed off and said that they had understood the prospectus. What the Department of Labor is saying here is that that's wrong, and there's a report out that shows that the people that have been sold these high commission products generally have performance that's well below average. And that's the big one. So you're charged a lot of money to put money in a product that underperforms other things. And that's a problem. So the Department of Labor says this is that an IRA is no different as far as the standard of care goes than the retirement plan before it became an IRA. There's a problem in that most IRAs, the advice that is being given is by salespeople. And most people that get advice by salespeople will say that they want the advice. There's a problem in that if they're not clearly informed on what the charges are, then they're not making an informed decision. So there is a problem here, and this is a rule that's been percolating along now since 2010. The standard, the wording for the rule hasn't changed much since 2010. It's just not been approved. It keeps getting submitted every year, and Congress goes, no. The fact that the president is invoking an executive order here, it gets into a gray area in that the law says that Congress must approve the rules.
Well, no, they don't have to approve the rules. They passed a law.
Well, that law said that you will do a survey that says what the rules shall be, mm-hmm. and Congress will approve the survey and the rule.
Mm-hmm.
That's clearly written. So every year that they've done, I mean, they did what their job was. The Department of Labor is not supposed to be political, just like the IRS is, and it doesn't stop them from being political sometimes. But in this case, they're looking at what is the benefit of the investor, what is the benefit of the person involved. And one of the rules is, for instance, you're not supposed to, when they're coming up with this rule, don't compound the investor confusion that the Securities and Exchange Commission recent study under the Dodd-Frank Act identified as the primary problem for retail investors. That study said that people don't know when they're working with a fiduciary versus a salesperson.
It was the Pension Protection Act of 2006.
Yeah.
That's the one. And it specifically directed, the thing about the IRA rules,
right?
They aren't implementing that because Congress would have to approve it. It did.
That was Dodd-Frank that did the IRA rules. The Pension Protection Act is saying the fiduciary thing.
The Pension Protection Act put a series of rules on the IRA.
Yeah.
About managing just simply IRAs.
Right. That thing that I just quoted was done. That's all I'm saying.
Okay. And it did say that they'd have to do a survey. They did a survey. They concluded they needed to change the rules, but then Congress had changed and said, no, you can't do it.
Right.
This one implements a provision of that act and of Dodd-Frank that says on rollovers fix this.
Yeah. It's not the traditional IRAs that isn't a rollover, but it's something that comes directly mm-hmm. from a retirement plan, a 401k or a pension plan.
To give you an example, probably, and we don't know until the rules are finally completely finalized and out and everything else, probably the issue of rolling an IRA into a fixed annuity
mm-hmm.
because of the extremely high commissions and expenses involved will probably become illegal unless somebody comes out with a no-load, cost-effective annuity, which is a little hard to imagine.
It would be kind of nice to have, but they don't exist at this point.
The issue here is that what it's trying to do is to make a quote, financial advisor, end quote, act like an advisor. And by the way, the president said this. I happen to agree with him completely. What he says, if somebody's going to call themselves an advisor, they need to act like an advisor, not like a salesperson.
Right.
And I have been singing that song for many, many years.
That's actually exactly what I was talking about. That survey that was done by the SEC that asked the general public what the difference was between an investment advisor and a financial advisor, and they didn't know. And most people listening, even though they listen to this program and we talk about it, don't know. A financial advisor is a salesperson, and an investment advisor is someone that gives fiduciary advice in the best interest of the client.
And the weird thing is, even the organizations, including the SEC, have started calling investment advisors financial advisors.
Right. It's very confusing.
And the bottom line to it is, and it's not just simply asking for the word fiduciary. You should get a form ADV from a person.
Yeah. In writing. Fiduciary words should be in writing.
And we have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. This is Richard in Temple. I was listening earlier, then I had to get out of the truck, but just wanted you to have your facts straight. Pelosi and the Democrats took over in 2006, not 2008.
You're right. You're completely correct.
So they controlled the purse strings of Congress mm-hmm. on the last 2 years of the Bush presidency.
But it was introduced, the Pension Protection Act of 2006 got full Republican support.
I agree.
Which is interesting, and was signed by a Republican president. And I think the Republicans still had the Senate at that point. Passed through the Senate with full Republican support. Now, this is the irony to me. I don't think people at the time realized that it was going to require security salespersons, financial advisors, to actually act in the best interest of their customers. And once the industry realized what they was looking at, they have poured money into Washington to keep that from happening. And this is, I am completely, utterly against that, by the way. If you look at the huge profits and the scandals that have gone on since then in the major financial houses.
There's certain areas where we've heard us talk about this before. On the economics end of the spectrum, when we're talking about regulation, there is an extreme danger of over-regulation when you're talking about the mainstream area of the economy. But when it comes to concepts like intellectual property and the buying and selling of these concepts, and all stocks are is intellectual. You have a piece of paper that represents the conceptual ownership of a company in a percentage that is usually minutely small. So these concepts are being regulated because they're considered to be selling blue sky. And there's blue sky laws out there. The government has an obligation to save people from fraud.
I would be more than happy recently on several occasions to buy some blue sky.
Right. That would be nice. A nice blue sky would be very, very nice occasionally.
Actually, I'd like some black sky, but that's beside the point.
And the problem with selling these concepts is it's easy to sell 110% of a company. It's easy to commit fraud. And when the trust of the American public is at stake, the government is required to step in and create regulations to keep people safe and to define what safe is. If you're buying a car, there are regulations on the car to make sure that it's not a lemon, the lemon laws of the state of Texas. Well, when you're selling that car across state lines, there's no United States federal government lemon law. It's just whatever state you're in. When it comes to the sale of a stock, we have some interlinking laws that cover the nation that say, all right, you got a stock, and it's the, if you bought it from this state or that state, it's the same ownership that you would have bought anywhere. And when it comes to understanding what you're doing, as financial products have gotten more complex, as the tax code has gotten more complex, what has come with it are these retirement plans that are operating differently. And what the government has said from the beginning is we have to protect the people that are involved in these things because the tax law is complex. The people that are giving advice on these things have to be working in the best interest of the client, of the investor. If they're not, then it's too easy to confuse it, because your job, listener, generally is not to read the tax code. You might be a CPA. Then it's your job. Even the CPA needs help when it comes to investments. And if there are hidden charges or not so hidden charges, but you just have to look them up in the prospectus, and sometimes they're on five different pages that you have to add them all up together.
And on sometimes on many different documents. There's something called a statement of additional information that hides a lot of those.
All of that stuff means that you're at risk. And if you're moving from a place where all of that stuff was handled for you by an employer to a place where it's not handled, it's handled completely by you, you have to do all the due diligence, but you've got no training to do it. That's where the government is stepping in. Now, I personally think that everybody should get the training to do it, but that's not going to happen. So we have to protect the people that are ignorant, that are getting... I mean, if a person was offered plastic surgery and they didn't need it, that's the health of the person that's involved there, and they say, all right, you need to get a tummy tuck, and the doctor does the tummy tuck, and it's all on the doctor's idea, and the person comes back and is injured by it and didn't understand what was going on. Well, you've got all these forms that you signed that said you understood what was going on. It's still the doctor's fault, because the doctor's the fiduciary. Now, we've got caps on liability. We've got caps on a lot of things. But the reality is that the doctor does it every day. They know what the risks are. It's their job to inform the patient. And when it comes to retirement accounts, that is not the standard. It is now, or will be very soon, and the law says it's supposed to be that standard today. Now,
and there's a good reason that the government can get right in the middle of this, because a very significant portion of the money
that belongs to the government.
That's in an ERISA qualified retirement plan. It's one that your employer has. About a third of it belongs to the federal government.
That's taxes you haven't paid yet. The government doesn't want to watch those taxes go away. They want to make sure that the advice that's given on those taxes is given correctly, so that when they get paid appropriately.
And in return for allowing you not to pay taxes, the government has certainly the right to regulate those plans. You don't have to invest in a retirement plan. We got a break for commercials, though. We do have to invest in that. And we have to do that so the Town Square stays on the air, so that KTM continues to pay the electric bill and so on. And we'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. Again, the telephone number is in here, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And telephone numbers in here still 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
And Jake has been doing his due diligence, and he looked at when Congress turned over and shifted controls and so on to get the final word on this. I'll transfer you to our man on the scene, Jake McClure.
It looks like 2006 was the election that caused the Democrats to take control of the House. Mm-hmm. However, it was 2007 when they actually took control. Pension Protection Act of 2006 was passed under a Republican controlled Senate and House.
Yes, and signed by a Republican president. And that's just one of those great irons. By the way, I think it's a great bill.
Yeah,
me too. One of the things I don't understand is why some of the people who wrote it and supported it...
I understand completely.
...want to fight it.
Yeah, I understand completely, because there's a lot of money coming to bear on the fundraising campaigns that money comes from financial organizations. And those financial organizations, and I mean, think of the big ones, Morgan Stanley. You go down the list of the big, big, big investment firms out there, and a lot of their money comes from commissions on the sale of products into individual retirement accounts. They don't want to see this. They don't want to see a fiduciary standard. They don't want the client to, I mean, if I said to you, if you came in and I said to you, I don't want to work in your best interest. I want you to have to do as much due diligence as I do before when I give you the advice. I want you to be the one to look up what the cost is, and I want you to guess as to whether or not my advice is based on what I think is good for you or based on what I think is good for me and my corporation. You probably wouldn't want to work with me. But that is the way that caveat emptor works. If you go to a car dealership, you expect the car dealership to want to make a profit without telling you how it happens. It's a feeling that everybody knows, and a little bit of dread is there. Some people really like the idea of going in and really negotiating hard. It's the horse buying thing. When it comes to investment advice, when it comes to the advice on your investments, there are fiduciaries out there and there are non-fiduciaries out there. And again and again and again, the surveys have come out and say that people don't know the difference between the two. If you go in and somebody says, you should buy this, I think it's the best thing for you, they say, oh, okay, well, I trust you. Well, there's a group of people that are required by law when they say that to give you a whole bunch of information verbally and in writing so that you really understand the decision that you're making. And there's another group of people that's allowed, that is required by law to give you a bunch of information for you to look up yourself. And unless you know the difference, you're in trouble. And what this new rule is supposed to be, and it's not supposed to be a new rule, this is 9 years after the law was passed. The rule was supposed to be in place way, way, way back when.
Okay.
So anyway, we've kind of beaten that dead horse.
Yeah. There's in the larger context of the big wide world right now, the Federal Reserve has the governors of the Federal Reserve are going around making speeches, and they're saying over and over again, they're all singing pretty much the same tune, which is either at the June or September meeting of the Federal Reserve, they're going to raise rates on short-term loans from the Federal Reserve. It's looking more like June, not because there's any inflation. There isn't.
Mm-mm.
And there's certainly a lot of people who are telling them, no, don't raise rates because there is no threat of inflation. There's threat of deflation, and there is around the world. And there's threat of deflation in the United States. As a matter of fact, technically in January,
yeah, our consumer price index, they were all down.
We were technically year over year, 1 year.
Negative.
We had a negative at the end of January. On the other hand, what they see is that wages are starting to come up, employment is starting to come up, and they have to start slowing things down. And by the way, slowing things down, the zero interest rate that they're using right now at the Federal Reserve is abnormal. And it's kind of like you're being on an IV drip. The quicker we get that IV drip out of there, if you can take fluids in regularly, the better off we're going to be. And having a small 0.25% interest rate from the Federal Reserve is not at all a bad thing. Matter of fact, the only thing, oddly enough, it has got the rest of the world spooked right now, because that means at that point, somebody could probably buy treasury notes or treasury bills and actually expect to get a little bit of return on them, which means that a lot of money is likely to come into the United States and the dollar is likely to go up, which is not going to make a lot of people real happy. It does mean that we have the only stable economy in the world, large stable economy. There's some other aspects of this, though, that are probably important to realize, and the naysayers are not paying a lot of attention to this. Quantitative easing has stopped, and I know, if you understood what I just said, you're a fellow geek, meaning that the Fed is no longer out there buying more new bonds. Okay, now here's the backside to that, though. And then it came out in Chairman Yellen's testimony. They are holding the number of bonds they have constant, the dollar value, the number, the face value of these bonds. What does that mean? Because a lot of these bonds are maturing. As they mature almost inevitably with a profit that they turn over to the Treasury. Unless, and this is a key caveat, that money is used to buy new bonds to replace them. What they're doing is they're still buying bonds on the open market, just at a reduced rate. As their mortgage bonds, Treasury bonds, whatever, mature, the Federal Reserve is taking at least part of that money and buying new bonds. Now, why are they doing that? They're doing that to hold long-term interest rates down while allowing, they want the short-term interest rates to gradually rise. They want the long-term interest rates to be held down so as not to completely distort the market and throw everything out of kilter. So they're not done with their therapy in the economy. They're holding it steady right now. In other words, if you're thinking about this in a medical term, the economy is stabilized and is returning to health. But as a stable economy, the Federal Reserve is continuing to support it at the long end. Why is that important? That means that mortgage rates tend to be 15 to 30 years. They tend to stay down. Right now, they're still in the between 3 and 4%, which is, by the way, an excellent, excellent historic rate. Long-term corporate bonds can be issued at relatively low rates. What does that mean? That means that the liquidity in the system is still there. People are able to finance new major capital purchases, including corporations, at very, very reasonable rates. This is part of what is increasing our economy's gradual acceleration as we dig further out of debt, as individuals dig out of debt. And by the way, I had a person announce to me very proudly that her short-term debt was gone. She very carefully worked through that, one of our clients. And that's really impressive, but you see, that's typical. Now what's going to happen, though? She feels a little more free to go out and spend money doing things, which is why the economy is gradually picking up. And the other thing is, if I change subjects here,
sure.
I'm on a long roll here. Germany's vision for industry fear. Did you get this? Industry fear?
Industry fear.
Yes, which four in Germany is fear.
Okay. Foreign exchange.
Eins, zwei, drei, vier. Okay.
Okay.
No. Fear. No. Four.
Four.
Yes. It's called industrial. If you want to translate that into English, it's normally called industry four.
Uh-huh.
What the economists and Chancellor Merkel have been talking about is the fourth industrial revolution is underway. And her model for that is the Siemens factory in Amberg, Germany, in Bavaria. And it's a beautiful manufacturing facility where they manufacture high-tech components for various things. And it showed a picture of the floor with the manufacturing underway. Big, gigantic factory floor, okay? No people. All run electronically. The raw material comes in one end, the finished product goes out the other end. The people who monitor this are sitting in a control room that looks sort of like NASA, only smaller. And they're saying that is the future. So productivity rises, but this is the big change moving forward. And this is something that's going on around the world. It's normally deflation normally accompanies these changes. So we're basically in a more or less, believe it or not, normal situation. Unfortunately, we're in a normal situation that last was duplicated at the beginning of the 20th century, almost exactly 100 years ago. And when you look at what the end result was of all that hyperproduction, and the people who were made poor and the people who weren't, and the nations that were left poor and as a result felt like they needed to go to war, let's just hope we can head some of that off. By the way, you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. We do have one more commercial break to do, but the telephone numbers in here are 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
And we'll be back.
A message from Healthy Nutrition News. Stop. If you're over 40 and work out to stay young, do not do another exercise until you've read our free special report. Why? Because the fact is, if you're working out more than 90 minutes a week, you may actually be aging faster. You see, after 40, the aging process naturally begins to accelerate, about 6 months extra every year, and doing certain specific types of exercise have been shown to accelerate aging even more. But the great news is that by using a specific style of exercise, you can not only slow, but actually reverse the aging process to help you look and feel years younger. At worstagingexercise.com, you're going to discover the number one worst exercise for aging, as well as the secret tips and tricks of a world-famous fitness expert to not only stop the rapid onset of aging, but also how to reverse it and actually help you begin aging backwards by allowing your body to restore your natural youth hormones. Go to worstagingexercise.com for this free report. Worstagingexercise.com. That's worstagingexercise.com.
Every year, Steve Faircal climbs the stairs at the John Hancock Center in Chicago, 94 floors to the top.
It's called the hustle up the Hancock.
It's hard to believe when you watch Steve today that a few years ago, his lungs were failing and he was fighting to survive.
For 8 hours a day, someone was pounding on my chest to try and keep my lungs clear. I honestly don't think I had more than a couple weeks to live.
That's when Steve received the gift of life, a double lung transplant made possible by an organ donor.
After I got my new lungs, I started doing things that I had never been able to do. I never knew that breathing could feel this good.
Steve climbs to honor his donor and to raise awareness for organ, eye, and tissue donation.
Wouldn't you like that when you left this beautiful planet, that you could save a few lives on your way out? It's an incredible gift.
Imagine what you could make possible by leaving behind the gift of life. Learn more and sign up as an organ, eye, and tissue donor. Go to organdonor.gov. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Health Resources and Services Administration. A female.
And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And we have about
8 minutes, a little less than 8 minutes.
Yeah, left in today's shoe. So
it's a shoe?
It's a shoe. And you can call us.
If it fits, then wear it.
773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
We're seeing record quantities of tax identity theft. Record quantities.
As in social security numbers and tax ID numbers for corporations?
No. I'm talking about here is where you go to file your to get your return,
right,
and you discover that somebody else already got it.
Yeah, somebody else already filed your taxes and got a refund.
Yeah, so, and we have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Hi, how you doing? I'm Mark.
Hello, Mark.
I just had a question about what's the most harmful personal finance myths out there that should be really dispelled, but everyone believes them anyway?
Ooh.
The most harmful. That
I got
oh,
one.
I got one.
I got one, too. You go first. And
that there is some secret way
I'm gonna say the same
that
thing.
Only the insiders know that you can get rich quickly without any risk.
Yeah, that is the beginning of every con game out there. If basically you believe that there's some secret group of people that have information and are able to make decisions that always make profits, that group does not exist.
Yeah. It used to be really, really standard. We'd have people come in where somebody had told them about this secret real estate deal where you bought up mortgages on old buildings or something like that, and you get 1% a month. You get 12% a year, and it's just paid out. Those are called Ponzi schemes.
Yeah, scams.
People who say the second one, I guess, would be this costs you nothing. You don't pay me anything. The company pays me.
Right. Most scams start with that concept of I'm not getting paid. Everything that I'm doing is out of the goodness of my heart. When the reality is that you know they're getting paid, but you'd rather not look too deeply because it sounds too good to be true. So listen to that too good to be true.
Right.
Another big one. This is huge. We see it. I've seen it in the past week even. People come to me and they say, The United States government is about to do, you can fill in a blank here, they're about to do something.
Convert some currency or something.
And in the case that the most recent thing is, the United States government is about to back up the Iraqi dinar somehow, some way, and the dinar is about to be worth millions and millions of dollars more than it is now. And so people go and they buy a bunch of dinars, and it's really, really, it's basically they think that they're in on the ground floor. They have news that nobody else has. The reality is that when news comes out that nobody else has, if you act on it, it's illegal most of the time. It's called insider trading.
Okay.
And if somebody comes to you and says that they have information that nobody else has, they're either one, lying, or two, breaking the law. So there's this feeling like...
like they could be violently ignorant.
Right. and if they're violently ignorant, it doesn't mean that they're not breaking the law.
Yeah, I mean, the issue is that there's two kinds of people you should not trust under any circumstances. One is the people who are well-intentioned but ignorant.
Yeah.
Those are the guy who just got recruited the other day to sell you a mutual fund or insurance or something.
Right.
The second group of people are people who are very, very intelligent and very, very capable and have no scruples whatsoever and will be very happy to relieve you of your money.
Which kind of goes with what we were talking about a minute ago about caveat emptor. If you don't know what you're buying before you buy it, you probably shouldn't buy it.
The biggest mistake most people make, though, is not investing.
Correct.
In other words, I'm just going to tell you something.
They get scared. Overwhelmed.
Choose a mediocre mutual fund. Now, I'm going to say mutual fund because mutual fund, by definition, not an ETF, a mutual fund is protected under the Investment Company Act of 1940 against somebody going bankrupt and you losing all your money. Now, it doesn't protect you from market moves. Choose a mediocre, middle-of-the-road mutual fund, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Put 10% of everything you make into it. About 20 or 30 years later, you will have a new name. Wealthy.
Okay.
I mean, that's I can't forecast the future, but I can tell you.
Is that pretty much the same thing as a 401k?
Well, but your 401k, you find a mediocre, middle-of-the-road set of mutual funds. See all those M's in there? That's because my name's McClure. And you steadily invest in it, and you make sure you capture the match. You don't try to out-time the market. You don't dodge out of the market. You don't dodge in the market. You be very careful as you make your initial investments and stick with them over a long period of time.
That kind of leads to another. You going back to that original question. People a lot of times will think they're smarter than the market. They think that they can get in and get out. They play the market. The word play the market means that they're amateurs. You don't play. It isn't a game.
You got that.
It's like saying I'm going to start a business and I'm going to play the car business. No, you don't play it. You are doing something that you're pretty sure will make a profit because you're adding value.
Right.
If you're not adding value.
What I've always heard is the stock market is like it's a long-term plan. It's not a
correct
short-term anything.
But if you're in the stock market, you got a problem. The issue is hire a good manager. And how do you do that? You find a good, low-cost, mediocre, middle-of-the-road, if you can't do anything else, mutual fund. That's generally called a balanced fund or a conservative value fund or something like that in there. And you diversify a little bit, and that gets a little more complicated. But the bottom line to it is if you're young and you got a 401k and you stick with the middle of the road.
Don't try to get out when the market's down. That's a big one.
And you just keep putting the money away. The failure to do that is probably the single largest error people make because most people will arrive at retirement with little or nothing to live on.
There is something called a unit investment trust, which is about as ugly a beast in the financial world as you can look at. And a lot of times they'll pay half of your money going into it for the first year as a commission, a 50% commission. And
are those still around?
They still exist.
Contractual still exists?
Yeah, they're very limited, and who can sell them is very limited, but they still exist. And I'm bringing them up for a reason, because generally when you hear somebody paid 50% commission, you go, man, they got ripped off. But I know some people that made it to retirement having gotten ripped off because they got started with a high-pressure sales thing.
Oh, yeah.
So there is a benefit even in the con artist out there. There's a benefit even in somebody that's making a lot of money off of you. If you get started and stick with it, then worry about the other stuff. I mean, it's a good idea to try to not be taken advantage of at the beginning, but at least do something. And we're about out of time. Thanks. Thank you very much for the call.
Good question.
Yeah, we are about out of time for this week. If you would like to contact us off the air, we have voicemail waiting this weekend locally at
947-1111.
You can reach that same voicemail toll-free at 1-800-914-PLAN. That's 1-800-914-7526. You can email us at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. You can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com. Listen to podcasts. Until next week, this has been The Personal Wealth Coach.
Fort Hood, the best talk in America. News Radio 1400 KTEN.
The following is a paid advertisement by Purity Products.